Hello and welcome to another episode of Full Court Finance here at Zacks. I'm your host, Ben Raines. And this week, we're going to be talking about some new companies and some pretty big, well-known companies that are currently disrupting the sportswear retail industry. But before we do that, I want to say, remember, if you have any questions or episode suggestions, please feel free to shoot us an email over at podcast@zacks.com. Also, make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. So today, we're going to be starting with Farfetch's $250 million acquisition of New York-based sneaker startup called Stadium Goods that was announced late last week. But before we get into breaking down the deal, I want to give a little bit of a background in what Farfetch itself does for our listeners who might not be that familiar, which was myself until not too long ago. Farfetch is an online e-commerce platform that sells luxury apparel, footwear, and accessories. It's a London-based online marketplace, trades under the ticker FTCH. It went public in late September of this current year, so just a couple months ago, and it opened at $27 a share. And as of closing of trading Friday, this past Friday, shares were down 16% since its IPO at roughly $24 a share. It's traded in between $18 and $32 over the last 2 months or so. And then in terms of the company itself, the company was founded 10 years ago, and it started as an online platform for some local high-end boutiques to reach a broader audience, and it slowly since then evolved to have big, huge, well-known global luxury brands like Gucci and all these other companies sell directly to consumers online. So the CEO I listened to an interview, he said basically for the last 10 years, he's just been trying to promote and tell these luxury goods companies that, hey, this e-commerce place is going to be a great place for you going forward. But you can see why they thought maybe 10 years ago before Amazon and all these places and all these companies who have now tried to catch up to Amazon are selling everything online, that they thought cheapening their brand by selling it online would be detrimental to their business. Because at the end of the day, these luxury apparel companies, all they have is that cachet of this brand means something. So you can see how they would be a little nervous to go so quickly to online retail. So at the moment, the company says it sells over 700 brands, pretty much ships them all around the world. And then in terms of the luxury market itself, because I think these numbers help understand just how big it is, because I didn't even know. The luxury retail industry is estimated to be worth $300 billion, with less, like between 9 and 10% of that right now being online sales. And then by 2025, industry experts expect it to be maybe a $450 billion business. And Farfetch's CEO sees the company being able to grow at about 25% a year for the next couple of years. And then he sees the market growing even more, like I said. And at the moment, two-thirds of their clients are women. And they're trending very young, 25, which is kind of crazy because in general, there's nothing cheap on their website. If you go on Farfetch and just look around, it is pretty crazy some of the prices people are willing to pay for stuff, but this world is a little something I'm not as familiar with, so maybe it's not as crazy to some. And then in general, how they've performed so far, the company's market cap was roughly $7 billion. Some of their investors include JD.com, which is China's second largest e-commerce firm, right behind Alibaba, of course, which is one of Amazon's biggest global competitors. And so last quarter, Farfetch, which still hasn't turned a profit yet, saw their revenues jump roughly 60% to $386 million. And this was their November quarter they just reported. Revenues, like I said, jumped 60%. Their active customer base was up 42%. Number of orders up 55%. So growing pretty solidly there. And then looking ahead, our Zacks consensus estimates calling for the brand to reach $580 million next quarter, which would represent 50% growth. But they're projected to post a 65 cents per share loss. So nothing particularly great there, but they're growing on the top line for now, which is to be expected for a company that just went public. And then now we're going to jump back into what Stadium Goods is and why this is kind of emblematic of this larger shift in retail, especially with sportswear and all of that jazz going on right now. So as I mentioned up top, Stadium Goods was just acquired for $250 million in cash and stock. And Stadium Goods has a pretty basic business model that's caught on as part of this larger secondary market. They sell new and dead stock, so just stuff that's no longer in rotation at stores, online, and they have one brick and mortar store in the Soho neighborhood of New York City. And they sell sportswear, so tennis shoes, everything from Jordans and Yeezys to just all of the hot stuff that people, I mean, I was looking on their site, they're selling Jordans on there. Some of them are $1,000. So they're selling this secondary market for sportswear, which if you listen to this podcast before, what we've talked about a lot is that's where the growth is in the sports apparel industry now. It's not necessarily the Under Armour style performance wear, but it's this, you can wear it wherever. You could wear it to work. You can wear it out on a Saturday night. You can wear it walking around on Sunday morning. That's where the growth is. So the company itself was only founded in 2015, and they're already sold for $250 million. Pretty crazy. They've gotten some funding early on from Mark Cuban, Churning Group, who's invested in some other sports startups as well. And as I said, they're really capitalizing on this secondary market where these big companies like Adidas and Puma and Nike are making a lot of money because just their shoes that are very popular. The idea is that these limited release shoes can draw a huge, huge upsell on these secondary markets, and that's where all this money is coming from. So in general, some of these numbers just are kind of mind-blowing, that the global athletic footwear industry alone is expected to be worth $95 billion by 2025, with the sneaker resale market hitting $1 billion. So this is just the secondary market after these shoes have gone on sale. And as I mentioned, they sell everything from $1,000 Jordans to $500 sweatshirts. And then there's other companies that do this as well. There's a company called GOAT, which is just exactly like it sounds, just G-O-A-T. StockX, they've been written up in the Wall Street Journal recently. And then Flight Club. And there's obviously many other secondary markets. But you can kind of think of it as an upscale eBay that's very specified to just be this sportswear apparel secondary market stuff. Actually, in the StockX article I read, the guy who started that pretty much said he was very happy with the secondary sneaker market on eBay and wanted to start something very specific to that. So that's the basic premise of what's going on with this secondary market. And I want to talk a little bit more about one sort of example with Nike and some companies to let listeners understand exactly how this world works and how this is really good for companies like Nike and Adidas and not necessarily great for companies that I've talked about that have struggled with this, like Under Armour. So as I mentioned, this sportswear athleisure business is growing, and we're going to do a little bit of a case study for how Nike and these companies can capitalize on this. I've mentioned this guy on this podcast before, about a year ago, I think at this point almost, Virgil Abloh. He came up with Kanye West. They're both from the Chicago area. He actually got his engineering degree and then his architecture master's degree, and then ended up becoming Kanye West's creative director, working on merchandise, set design, all that stuff. And then he started a company in late 2012 called Off-White, which was a spinoff from another brand. It started to build some buzz in 2013, and then slowly was just generating more buzz online. And then what Nike can do is they can see this community growing sort of on Instagram, on the internet, and co-opt this brand and benefit them. So they, the summer of 2017, they partnered with Virgil. They dropped 10 off-white editions of these classic Nike shoes. They build up the buzz on social media, like I said. You can follow this directly. And then they start giving these shoes away to NBA players, professional soccer players. And then they all post on it on Twitter and Instagram. And then it's pretty much everywhere. And it just creates this internal buzz without Nike really having to do much. This is all kind of a groundswell, guerrilla marketing, and just takes off. This Nike campaign with Virgil then kind of propels him and his off-white brand to even be bigger than ever before with all these collaborations. And then by the spring of 2018, so they did this in the summer of 2017, that next spring, he becomes the head artistic director of menswear at Louis Vuitton. And that's how quickly this underground kind of sportswear company then partners with Nike, and then one of the biggest luxury fashion brands in the world gets that guy to take over. And this is just, as I mentioned at the top, it kind of shows this world of a big brand like Nike has the power to do all this stuff where they're creating their brand on everyone's wearing it, or everyone that matters on this big, like, oh, movie star, basketball player kind of scene. This matters so much. And it's obviously not a big part of their business for Nike, this off-white collaboration, because not that many people can afford to buy these collaborations. They're not selling that much of it, especially when you consider it. So Nike's, they're set to release their quarterly earnings results this Thursday. Their revenues are supposed to be up 7% to $9.16 billion. So obviously Off-White's little collaboration is not doing that much of their business, but it's a reason why Nike still matters. And I've read so much stuff about how partnerships don't really matter for these giant companies, but you have to create the sense that people, that Nike itself, that logo still matters. And they're definitely able to do this through these underground companies that maybe not everyone's heard of, but the quote-unquote right people, the cool people have heard of it. And once again, they just did this within the last 2 months or so with another former Kanye West creative partner. Jared Lorenzo has his own clothing company that's become relatively popular in the last few years or so. It's called Fear of God. He then partners with Nike, or Nike partners with him. They release some exclusive basketball shoes. They send it to NBA players. It's on the NBA courts 2 days after you see it on Instagram. It's already then been taken by NBA 2K and put in the game. It's this crazy world of how social media can just quickly create demand for things, where then 2 days later they release it at some of these random high-end sportswear stores, and there's lines down the block to buy these $500 plus basketball shoes that most people are probably not going to actually wear to play basketball. And I think it just stands in contrast to how Nike and Adidas, through partnerships, and even Puma as well, can just do all of this without actually having to sell performance wear based stuff at all. And they obviously are still selling that. It still matters to the brand, but it's all this off the court, at least for now and the foreseeable future, that it seems to be growing these businesses in a really big way, where, as now I've mentioned a couple times, that Under Armour's most successful partnership to date, you could argue, aside from Steph Curry's shoes, which their sales have been iffy, that Dwayne The Rock Johnson's their biggest partner, and he's selling a real hardcore performance workout gear, which, as I said, it's just not where the market is going in general. And now that we've talked about this, I kind of want to talk a little bit about this shakeup of traditional retail and what some of these other big companies have done to try to get a part of this newer, younger, online-specific retail industry. So as some of you might know, Walmart has done a lot of this. They bought a men's clothing company called Bonobos in 2017 for $310 million, and then they've expanded that e-commerce footprint pretty quickly. And They also bought Moose Jaw, which sells outdoor equipment that same year as well. Moose Jaw carries brands like Patagonia, Canada Goose, VF Corporations, North Face, all that kind of stuff. So they're Walmart, giant, huge, multi-billion dollar company, one of the biggest retailers in the world, if not the biggest retailer in the world, is doing these small little deals as a way to capture this online hip, trendy brands that are doing well in specific areas. And then you had a company I've talked about on this podcast before, an upstart company called Body Armor. Coca-Cola just acquired a minority stake in the company earlier this summer in August with a path towards complete ownership. And Body Armor is a sportswear drink that is trying to eventually challenge PepsiCo's Gatorade for that top spot. Kobe Bryant's a big part of that ownership group. And then speaking of Kobe, he just started his own athlete-focused body and skincare company called Art of Sport. It's got some bigger names as the faces of the brand: Javi Baez of the Chicago Cubs, a skateboarder Ryan Sheckler, James Harden. So just this idea that these smaller companies via e-commerce can really try to shake up some of these bigger players because they don't have as much overhead. They don't need to open their own retail spot, and they can just get directly to these who would be their consumers pretty easily via these celebrities, athletes who are widely followed. And just how, I don't know if any of the listeners actually use Instagram, which has now become so huge for Facebook, especially with their sponsored posts, which are hard to, I mean, it says it's sponsored, but it's really hard to distinguish between what is your content and what is a sponsored ad. And it's so good at marketing directly towards the user. It's pretty insane and also kind of scary, as some people might be afraid of, but that these smaller upstart brands can really get directly to their target audience pretty easily. And then you also had Walgreens. They partnered with and have a little bit of a stake in now in Birchbox, which is a subscription-based makeup company, and they're going to now sell that in Walgreens to try to attract this younger clientele. So all these giant companies are really trying to get into any bit of this business that they can going forward. And then we talked Kobe. I read this recently because I actually saw, so LeBron James moved out to LA. He's now part of the LA Lakers. And at one of the games earlier in the year, I saw him taking a picture with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Cindy Crawford. I was like, this is a very strange courtside photo. Turns out next couple days, they announced that the three of them, plus skier Lindsey Vonn, have started their own supplement/health and wellness company called Ladder. The company itself seems a little vague. The company claims to provide support, guidance through content, community, and nutritional products. They want to help their clients reach their quote lifestyle goals. It's created for elite athletes, but designed for all lifestyles. In the premises, they're selling dietary supplements and protein powders and some energy supplements and then some lifestyle kind of courses. But the idea is that these people with their names can now undercut these big businesses where there used to be more barriers to entry, and they can just reach their consumers in such a quick and easy and relatively cheap way that long term you could see more of these people that have a name can partner or start their own brand way more easily than they ever could before, and that all of these upstart companies have a chance to really impact stuff on a larger scale. I mean, as we talked about with Farfetch, in this company that started as a place to sell Jordans in Soho is getting bought for $250 million because the secondary sneaker market is so big, and that the companies like Nike and Adidas are really capitalizing on this secondary market, and then they're partnering with these companies that have grown in terms of this streetwear on the internet. And it's really just a crazy world, and I think the retail world will be really fun to watch for the next few years to see how this can evolve as these smaller companies gain huge followings and these large companies who are trying desperately to grow in the age of Amazon are partnering with them, and they're ready and willing and want to partner with these small companies going forward. But I could talk about this for way too long. So that does it for another episode of Full Court Finance. Until next time, I'm your host, Ben Raines.